From a quarantine studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As thousands of Americans lost their lives and millions lost jobs, Republican members of the House and Senate asked President Trump to help the oil and gas industry. Obliging his party members, Trump met with the CEOs of ExxonMobil, Chevron, Occidental Petroleum, and others at the White House on Friday to offer his help to an industry that perhaps needs the least of help. For years, oil and gas companies have received direct taxpayer subsidies and have been among the most profitable sectors of the economy, as well as the most destructive to the environment. Now, with mass stay-at-home orders due to the coronavirus, oil prices have dropped precipitously. Trump has claimed to intervene on behalf of big oil, saying he brokered a deal between Russia and Saudi Arabia to reduce production and thereby increase prices. My guest is John Knoll. He is a senior climate campaigner at Greenpeace, and he organized a one-man protest outside the White House as CEOs were meeting Trump. Welcome to the program, John.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let's talk about what exactly happened on Friday and what led up to it. Is it clear that Trump was essentially responding to requests by House Republicans and senators who had, you know, separately written letters to the president to appeal to him to help oil and gas?
Yeah, on Wednesday, news leaked out that seven big oil and gas CEOs were going to meet at the White House with Trump on Friday to essentially ask for a taxpayer-funded bailout. We believe that Trump was responding to those letters from Senate and House Republicans, but he was also responding to his closest advisors. Harold Hamm, the former CEO of Continental Resources, is one of Trump's good friends, and Harold Hamm has been calling for a big oil bailout for weeks, and now they were able to secure the in-person meeting while the rest of the country is self-isolating.
So essentially, their basis for requesting some sort of bailout is that oil prices have fallen because, of course, suddenly there's just a lot fewer people buying gas because so many are stuck at home?
Oil prices are historically low because demand for oil has declined because people aren't driving, people aren't traveling. There's also a price war going on between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and Saudi Arabia has flooded the market with oil supply. So these factors combined has led to historic low oil prices. But the oil companies and the fracking companies are in trouble, not just because of low oil prices, but because of the way they manage their business, right? Fracking companies, it's expensive to frack and produce oil and gas, and these companies have taken on immense amount of Wall Street debt over the last 10 years to make the boom continue to grow, right? And so as soon as oil prices dip, they have problems making their debt payments and they go into crisis mode. And that's why they need federal intervention to make their business plan work.
So the senators and the members of Congress, mostly Republicans, I understand, that asked Trump to help the oil and gas industry are also recipients of donations from oil and gas industry groups, right?
Yeah, millions of dollars of donations. Our friends at Western Values Project put together an analysis showing that the senators, the Republican senators that wrote that request, requesting a bailout, have received millions in campaign donations. In fact, their success, their political success, is tied to the business success of the oil and gas industry. And let me say specifically, they're not just asking for a bailout or low interest loans. In one respect, they are asking for royalty payments, right? These are royalties paid to the Federal Reserve for oil that is produced on public lands. This is lands that all Americans own. And the Republicans are requesting that these royalties be delayed, reduced, or suspended altogether, right? And so that would make the oil and gas industry essentially stealing publicly owned resources, not compensating the American taxpayer.
So, lest we forget how much the US government already intervenes to prop up this industry, remind us how this very destructive industry is deeply subsidized by tax dollars to begin with.
Deeply, from the state level all the way up to the federal level, it's been a 100-year project to prop up the oil and gas industry. Upwards of $20 billion, there's analysis by our allies at Oil Change International, ran down the numbers. It's astounding. I mean, basically, oil and gas production is not profitable, would never, hardly ever be profitable if it were not propped up by a foundation of federal subsidies and favorable tax incentives that make it's clouding the true cost of oil production. We know that, right? We know the true cost of oil and gas production is not reflected in the price of gas or the price of oil, right? Because it excludes the impact, the public health and climate change impacts. And the price of oil is, the prices are artificially depressed as a result.
So here is an industry that, because of this government propping up, has also been one of the most profitable, right? I mean, ExxonMobil has been one of the most successful companies in the world. These are companies, and by the way, these are all big companies. There's very few sort of mom and pop oil and gas companies. These are companies that are already hugely profitable. Shouldn't they have enough reserves to tide over a brief drop in prices?
They absolutely should. I mean, ExxonMobil is one of the biggest companies in the entire world. They're like a sovereign nation. The fact that they are begging for an oil bailout is offensive. They should be able to weather this low price moment. And if they can't, what are they doing? How are they managing this business? The fact is, the oil and gas industry's survival is connected to endless expansion. That means endlessly finding and producing and extracting and burning new oil. There is no end in sight, right? And so, as soon as they run into any financial blip, they need help from the federal government to keep things moving. And that just shows that it's a business of the past, right? With these stimulus efforts, we need to build the future, not bail out the past. It's not that hard. People over polluters all day.
And it just should be said that in response to the demands by environmental activists to have a Green New Deal, which incidentally polls show the idea is quite popular, we're told that there's no way the government would do such a thing. That's socialist, that's interventionist. Meanwhile, the government continuously intervenes, but in the favor of these companies, rather than in the favor of ordinary people, right? I mean, this is the precisely the time for something like a Green New Deal, as millions of Americans are losing their jobs. The Sunrise Movement, which is a youth-led movement, has been pushing for this. We're not hearing one whisper about it in Washington.
We're on the cusp of a Green New Deal happening right now. If you could target $2 trillion and spend it in the right way, that's basically a Green New Deal. What we're asking for is massive investments to put people back to work, to meet our needs so that everyone can live a life with dignity and we can accelerate the transition beyond fossil fuels. That's what it is. We can remake our entire society, agriculture, energy, transportation, healthcare, everything can be done with large spending efforts to get us out of this economic and public health crisis that we're going on through right now. And I think Republicans know that, right? They know that the Green New Deal is an attractive idea, right? The ideas in the Green New Deal poll well. Everyone likes these ideas. So that's why they need to endlessly attack the moniker of the Green New Deal, because they are afraid of how popular these policies are and how much they actually help working families, right? They don't necessarily help CEOs and executives of big oil companies, but they do help working families who are out here every day struggling to make it work.
John, I want to go back to what Trump has been doing to help the oil and gas industry. One of the things that he touted earlier in the week was that he brokered a sort of deal with Saudi Arabia and Russia, which incidentally on Twitter he referred to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as my friend, quote unquote. This is a man who, of course, has been closely linked to organizing and ordering the murder of a Washington Post journalist. analyst, but apparently Trump claims to have brokered a deal between his friend, Mohammed bin Salman at Saudi Arabia, and, well, his other friend, Vladimir Putin, although he didn't use that term, to reduce production so that oil prices could rise. This is the same president who has spent months and years slamming OPEC, the oil-producing nations of the world, for hiking up prices and for artificially intervening. But he's essentially artificially intervened right now, hasn't he?
Absolutely. At the request of his friends in the oil and gas industry, Trump and the Republicans would literally do anything for the oil and gas industry because their survival is so inextricably linked to their survival of the oil and gas industry. They're essentially one in the same. Mm-hmm. But to your point, Trump tweeted that he brokered some deal, but it's unclear what actually went down. And we know Russia denied having a conversation with Saudi Arabia. So we're still trying to sort out the details of another Trump geopolitical tweet. So we're unclear what's actually happening with oil supply. What we do know is before this call, Texas hinted that they may have to curb supply from Gulf oil, offshore oil projects because of the coronavirus within offshore camps, right? So there are a number of employees on these offshore platforms that tested positive for coronavirus, and that may actually lead to a decline in production, at least from the Gulf. So it's unclear where the cuts are going to come from, but the challenges to the oil industry are mounting for sure.
So the importance of the oil and gas industry to the economy as a whole, we are told, is critical because this is the basis of transportation. This is an industry that needs saving because the world's economy, as it's designed, relies on keeping oil and gas prices lowered because we've got these long supply chains where CEOs chase the lowest prices for materials and the lowest labor costs in countries like China. But without intervention, we are forced to change our supply lines, find supplies closer to home. I'm wondering if you think that the coronavirus situation today gives us a glimpse of what sort of world we could have without the oil and gas industry, or at least one that plays a much smaller role in society.
Sure, the world needs energy, no doubt, to thrive, but it does not need fossil fuels at the scale that we're experiencing right now. We need to begin a managed decline of fossil fuel production and reduce our dependence. That is a popular idea. The oil and gas industry is working overtime to make us think that we can never live without them, that a transition is never coming. It's impossible. Or maybe it's so far off that it's not even worth this generation talking about. That's simply not true. If we can target our incentives correctly to battery storage, renewable energy, public transportation, and another number of areas that are growth areas, we could remake our society and get off fossil fuels swiftly and for good. I think the coronavirus, it highlights what really matters in life, and that is your connections to other people, and that is time that we have to ourselves, time that we have on this earth. These are things that can get lost in a roaring economy. You forget, it's so caught up in consumption and material expectations that the coronavirus is forcing us to sit still for a moment and figure out what matters. And that to me is community, connections, and time. And I think as we come out of this, there will be some takeaways that is gonna make the future better than the past.
What sort of help could Trump directly give these CEOs that visited him in the White House on Friday? You mentioned that they were asking to see an end to the royalties for oil and gas that they have to pay that's produced on public lands. But you also mentioned that they're looking for an actual bailout. I mean, could Trump actually set aside, grants for the oil and gas industry like he's done for the airline industry, or would he worry about the optics of that?
Absolutely. I think everything is on the table and we need to be ready for that. But in the stimulus package that was just passed, the CARES Act, there is a $500 billion slush fund that can give low interest loans, loan guarantees. And this is overseen by Steve Mnuchin. He can pretty much hand out loans to whoever he wants with very little oversight. There's an inspector general and a congressional panel, but other than that, very little oversight. And so it's pretty clear that the oil and gas industry is going to be applying and qualifying for those loans and loan guarantees in this massive slush fund. Beyond that, the EPA has already signaled that they would put a moratorium on compliance with our landmark environmental laws. This decreases the cost of operation for oil and gas firms.
Right. They actually explicitly cited the coronavirus and this blanket sort of waiver of regulations, which is just bizarre, right?
Yeah, no, it's wild. They're exploiting a public health crisis to make it cheaper for oil and gas companies to operate. That was one of their first priorities here, was to help the oil and gas industry by making them not comply with environmental and public health laws. It's pretty wild. They're also, we heard, thinking about speeding up permits on federal lands and extending federal land leases. But beyond that, we can expect many more letters from the American Petroleum Institute, and more senators asking for to do whatever it takes to save the oil and gas industry in this moment.
The Wall Street Journal explained that Mr. Trump is unlikely to endorse direct federal aid or market interventions during Friday's meeting, according to a senior U.S. official, but may consider smaller actions, including a waiver of a law that requires American vessels be used to transport goods, including oil, between U.S. ports. The president wants to show support, even if policy options are limited for now, the official said. It's quite stunning how the Trump administration, at a time when, you know, just within the same week that they told the American people to expect that 100,000 to 240,000 Americans are likely to die from this virus with mitigation, and that 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment in 1 week, that the president wants to show his support for the oil and gas industry. This ought to be so clear as day to the country what his priorities are, yet he's still enjoying 47% support in the public, according to a new poll. It just blows my mind, John.
It's grotesque, for sure. For sure. Everything is on the table. I wouldn't rule out direct payments to the oil and gas industry at some point. They are getting crushed right now on these historic low oil prices. So I could see that influential people, in the Trump circle, getting desperate to help the oil and gas industry.
I mean, they're getting crushed, but they've already reaped so many profits that you would imagine that they could dip into some of those profits to tide themselves over. We're always told as individuals to have, you know, a nest egg in times of crisis, but apparently corporate America isn't held to those same standards, even though they are reaping so many benefits disproportionately. Tell me about your one-man protest, John, on Friday outside the White House. I understand that you had a virus-friendly protest in front of the White House.
Yeah, totally. And this is one of those things, had we been in normal times, we would have created something much bigger, right, to make a bigger spectacle of what was going on inside. But I was able to go down by myself following all the social distancing guidelines and quarantine guidelines at the CDC and stand outside and just snag a couple pictures and make it known about what was going on, that even in these uncertain times, while the oil and gas industry is flying business class up from Texas to get a in-person meeting with the president, people power will not let this happen. We are watching at every turn, and there is nothing that the oil and gas industry can do without being heard about from the millions of people that are rising up, right? So we're asking all of our supporters to send messages to Congress to let them know that not 1 cent of taxpayer funds should be given to the fossil fuel industry during this crisis. And they can join our action hours where we connect with other activists, strategize, and build the movement that is going to be so essential to steering us out of this public health and economic crisis and building a massive coalition going forward, right? This is good. We are all coming together and saying no to a big oil bailout. But we're also saying yes to personal protective gear to healthcare workers who need it, right? It's insane that they don't have the things they need to save lives and keep us are also saying we need to include undocumented communities in this relief effort. They have been left out of every relief and aid package so far, and that is totally unacceptable. So it's not just solidarity around the oil and gas bailout, but it's solidarity across the board with unions and frontline workers and immigrants rising up to say we cannot repeat the same mistakes of the 2008 corporate bailout. This time will be different. It is people over polluters all day.
I just want to ask you one final question about the oil and gas industry that's been getting some attention but not being connected to the oil and gas industry, and that is that the use of plastic is being promoted once more with the coronavirus being given as justification. Plastic is a petroleum product. It is one of the avenues in which the oil and gas industry is diverting to because it's not as profitable as before, and the plastics industry is part of the petroleum industry, right? And they've been looking to flood the market, but been met with all these plastic bag bans around the country and the world. Now, in the coronavirus world, they want to convince people to abandon their reusable bags again and promote plastic, right?
Yeah, they're totally, again, exploiting the public health scare here and doubling down on disposable single-use plastics, which we know is a total nightmare for the environment. And we talk about plastics, we're not talking about banning medical supplies that save people's lives. That's not what we're saying. We're saying single-use disposable plastic has got to go. That has no place in our society. And the oil and gas and petrochemical industry is relentlessly pushing that on consumers who don't even want it. But these companies need petrochemicals and plastic as a growth area, right? So as demand for oil levels off and eventually declines over time, how is the oil and gas and petrochemical industry going to grow, right? So they see plastics as an area, as it's a growing piece of pie, a growing slice of a shrinking pie for them.
Give out a website where people can find out more about the work that you do and that others do at Greenpeace, John.
Yeah, it's greenpeace.org and Greenpeace USA on Instagram and Twitter.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
My guest is John Knoll, senior climate campaigner at Greenpeace. We've been discussing how the oil and gas industry is looking for handouts during the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.